Good morning and welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I'm Amy Otto, joined by Lee Cantor. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Miss Amy. How you doing? Got a lot of people here today.
Got a lot going on today. I'm excited about the show today because, you know, we have a common theme here. Everybody talks about education, whether it means educating our kids, educating our customers, educating the community. A lot of educating going on here today.
A lot of smart people.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And our first guest this morning, without further ado, I heard him. Good morning and welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. We have Cliff Oxford.
Hello. How you doing, Amy?
Good, Cliff. Welcome from Entrepreneur Advisors. Gosh, I just saw that article on you in the AJC. Things are really happening for you.
Yes, we're excited. We have, since we signed our joint venture with the Atlanta Business Chronicle and Biz Journals, we're going to be rolling this out to their footprint. And in fact, this is live radio, as you know, and in my office is Angie Robb. She's one of our members, and she's from Brightworth. So also welcome Amy. I should say Angie. Angie?
Good morning.
Angie, we've got full house here in two respects. Cliff, I want you to talk about your upcoming event and also just touch, too, on why the entrepreneur economy is the next big thing, because it sounds like it's exploding.
Well, our next meeting is September the 24th at the Four Seasons from 8 a.m. to noon. You can register by going to our website, entrepreneuradvisors.com. That's Entrepreneur Advisors, all one word, ORS Advisors. And that's at the Four Seasons, and we certainly welcome everybody to sign on and register for the event if you're an entrepreneur in this economy. And the reason... You know, if you look, Amy, at the word entrepreneur, it's kind of the sexy word of the day. The media is really loving it, and that's not always been the case. 20 years ago, if you were an entrepreneur, it was almost a little bit of a put down. And today, you're kind of a rock star because people know that that's the next big thing in the economy because creativity is what none of our competitors can duplicate. You know, they can duplicate our manufacturing cost, our service models, but the American creativity of the entrepreneur is very special to America. In fact, I think entrepreneurs have been in America instead of America inventing entrepreneurs. And so all this creativity unleashed, creating wealth, creating jobs, that's going to be the next big thing. It's not going to be a product or a technology. It's going to be entrepreneurs.
Now, Cliff, what's the biggest myth about an entrepreneur? You said that it's kind of a sexy term now to use for somebody, but, you know, it's almost, in some people's mind, interchangeable with the word consultant. It's like, what does it really mean? So what's the biggest myth that in your mind about an entrepreneur?
Probably there's two big myths. One, I think sometimes there's an idea that there's this entrepreneur that's raging around and, you know, firing people and kind of somewhat of a heartless streak to him. Even though he's one of my favorite CEOs, Steve Jobs kind of had that personality as he was growing Apple. But actually, entrepreneurs hate firing people. They're builders, they're growers, they live on momentum, they live on enablers, not disablers, and. And in fact, I remember one time, a few years ago, I was going to terminate someone, and they came to my office, and I really didn't want to do it. I just hated doing that. And they said, Cliff, you really need to do this person. And my CFO came in and said, did you terminate this person? And I said, no. I said, I didn't do it. And he says, I cannot believe you didn't do this. And I said, make matter worse, I even gave them a raise. So entrepreneurs are not, they're optimistic people, always hoping for the next dream. The next big myth is there's somewhat of a myth that entrepreneurs are huge risk takers.
Mm-hmm.
Not exactly true.
Then they need predators. To have a plan too, right? And a strategy,
yeah.
It sounds like.
And very predatory. Entrepreneurs go, they find niche markets. They find markets not being served. And they get into that market and serve the daylights out of it. So you know, they don't just take a risk like on, you know, blackjack in Vegas. They really say, they really see just the opposite. They go, this is a huge market not being served. Let's go serve it.
So what can entrepreneurs or folks attending your educational seminar or your symposium, what can they expect?
You know, they can expect huge educational content. Angie and I were just talking about it. It's somewhere between Harvard and Hard Knocks. You know, I have involved with Emory. I have a deep grasp of the MBA curriculum. And we take a percentage of that that applies to entrepreneurs. But it's also a lot of Hard Knocks, people who have done it. So, and then a natural offshoot of that is networking and doing business with each other and all of that. But it's all driven from the educational platform.
Excellent. And Cliff, you have a website that folks can find out a lot more about you and about your advisory group. Can you give us that website?
Yes, it's www.entrepreneuradvisors. And advisors is A-D-V-I-S-O-R-S, advisors.com, www.entrepreneuradvisors.com.
Terrific. And from the website, people can find out about the educational summit you're talking about, right?
Yes, that's right.
And lots of great articles and media resources. I definitely suggest our listeners visit your website.
Oh, thank you so much. We're in the business of educating entrepreneurs. So that's our passion and that's our role.
Excellent. And you do a good job. Again, one more time, the date and time of the event and your website.
Sure. September the 24th. We will start at 7:30 a.m. on September the 24th at the Four Seasons. And to register, just go to our website at www.entrepreneuradvisors.com.
Excellent. Thanks for being our guest this morning, Cliff. We appreciate having you and having all the interesting information. And we'll look forward to catching up with you soon.
Amy, thank you for inviting me.
Well, if you go to the event on the 24th, you'll be educated on all it takes to be an entrepreneur. But if you just don't get enough there and you want to network a little bit more, on September 25th, we have another event coming up. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. We have Dallas Hamilton from LinkedIn. Welcome.
Hi. Good morning.
So tell us about the LinkedIn event coming up on September 25th.
Well, first of all, just for clarity, I'm not with LinkedIn, but I have built my business model around LinkedIn.
Thank you.
And we have a event coming up on September 25th. It is our expo for Metro Atlanta Business Network. And LinkedIn has agreed to come in and do a seminar for us. So we're real excited about that, because talking about education, that's exactly what my company does. We host business networking events exclusively for LinkedIn members, but we also do training to educate them on how to leverage those LinkedIn connections that they have, so they just don't have a lot of connections sitting out there in cyberspace and they're not being monetized.
That's so true. I think there's a lot of people that get invited to be members or to join LinkedIn, and they have no idea why. You know, what do I do with it now? What can people expect? It's not just a seminar. It sounds like it's got all kinds of interesting components.
Well, when you come into the expo that we're having, that's going to be held at the SunTrust Garden Offices Atrium downtown, you're going to walk into a room of LinkedIn business leaders. So it's a great networking opportunity. We're going to have an exhibitor hall with about 25, 30 exhibitors. We're going to have a business fashion show. And again, even the clothiers are from LinkedIn. We're going to be featuring the models who are doing more than just modeling. We're promoting them by showing their LinkedIn profile on a screen, letting them know, you know, this is Amy Otto, her company. And at the end, we're going to say a good lead for her would be. And then as she walks out onto the stage, then the clothier will describe the clothing. We're also going to have a section called 15 Minutes of Fame, where we have four different LinkedIn members who are going to get on stage and show some very interesting things that they do with their company that they want to promote to the business community. And just for fun, we're throwing in a business dating game.
That sounds like fun. Tell me a little bit more about that.
The business dating game, there is a young lady by the name of Sarah Catherine Smith who has a business, a dating service. Mm-hmm. And so she is going to be the hostess, and a gentleman by the name of Jason Flake who does game show hosts. So they are collaborating, and they're going to have a bachelorette But in our event, they're not really going to be referred to as bachelorettes. It will be businesswoman. Mm-hmm. She will be selecting from three businessmen. And then we have a businessman selecting from three young businesswomen.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Wow. A lot going on. And, and it's a full day, right?
It's a full day. I forgot to mention, actually, the most important part of it is that LinkedIn Corporate will be there. April Kelly, who is the LinkedIn Live coordinator for LinkedIn, will be presenting a 90-minute seminar with a question and answer session. So it's really a must-attend event for any business leaders that are on LinkedIn.
And how can our listeners find out more about it if they're not already linked in with you?
Right. They can go to our website, www.metroabn, that's Metro, M-E-T-R-O, A-B-N, which stands for Atlanta Business Network.com.
Excellent.
Now, is the event only for women or it's for anybody?
No, it's for all LinkedIn members.
And how many people do you expect?
We're expecting about 200. It's a small expo. It's our first expo. We expect that to double in size next year. But about 200.
And then is the LinkedIn person from LinkedIn, are they going to speak? Or are they?
Yes, she is presenting the seminar with the question and answer session. That's April Kelly.
Now, do you have any tips for using, like for, you know, to take somebody who's a regular LinkedIn user to maybe make them a power LinkedIn user?
Well, what I find is a lot of people on LinkedIn, excuse me, are on LinkedIn, but they don't really know what they're doing. So I recommend a couple of things. First of all, make sure you have a good headshot. On LinkedIn, some people put their logos up there, and LinkedIn members don't want to see logos. They want to see people. Make sure you have a good photo up there. Join 50 groups on LinkedIn. That gives you access to a lot of people. What I do is I have two groups that I am very involved with. I leave all the settings on those groups, and on the other ones, I turn the settings off because I don't have time to listen to comments and discussions from that many people.
Right. Those are good tips.
Yeah. So is that the most groups you can join?
The maximum groups you can join on LinkedIn is 50. And then if some of those have subgroups, you can join unlimited subgroups.
Within the group.
Yes. Right. Mm-hmm.
Great tip.
Yeah, it is a great tip. Give us the information one more time, Dallas.
For the website, you go to www.metroabn.com, and please excuse our website. It is under revision, but on the homepage, there is a link that will take you to Eventbrite, and Eventbrite is our ticketing service that has all the details about our event, including the fact that we will be giving away a cruise for two, compliments of Axar Holidays. It is a Carnival Cruise Line, Cruise for Two, Bollywood style. Very exciting.
What fun. You know, Lee, I should register for that. I'm lucky with stuff like that.
Yeah?
Yeah, I am. I'm a lucky winner.
So I'll hang out with you there.
Yeah, there you go. Well, I think I will come. It sounds
great.
Very interesting.
Great.
And Lee asked if it was only for the women because he saw the fashion show, but I'm sure there's some male fashions.
Actually, most of our models are, it's about 50-50. We've got everything from business after hours wear to formal wear to business suits. It's going to be a lot of fun. And what makes it more fun is that these people are not professional models. So it'll be fun to see how they walk down the runway.
Excellent. I can't wait. Well, thanks for being with us today,
You're
Dallas,
welcome.
And sharing the LinkedIn event with us. Lee, I've gotten a little bit more active in LinkedIn.
Really? And you're a power user now?
Well, I've finally figured out how to use it. Not to mention, it helps me manage my database.
Oh, really?
Yeah, of guests and
how is that
in business as well? Well, if I can't remember someone's phone number or their email address,
it's all there.
Yeah, it's all there.
Right.
It's kind of like a mini database for me. It's good. I love it.
Can I add something to that? That's exactly what I do. When I come back from a networking event, I go straight to LinkedIn. I go to the advanced search. I put the person's first name, last name in, and the zip code that I have on the business card. And if they're on LinkedIn, there they are. So not only do I have a larger picture of this person because I have more than their business card information. I have their affiliations, their contacts, just all kinds of information. And I can connect to them, and that is my database. I do not keep a separate database outside of LinkedIn.
Do you connect with everybody you meet in networking?
Everybody I want to connect to, I should say. Yes.
That's right. And it helps me to jog my memory when you see put a name with the face, when you see the picture. It's definitely helpful. Thanks so much for that information. Well, you know, there's one person in our community that's definitely LinkedIn, and we're very passionate about education at the Atlanta Business Radio Show, and oftentimes we feature schools or universities. And this morning, I'm thrilled to have Dr. Brett Jacobson with us from Mount Vernon Presbyterian School. Welcome.
Thank you for the opportunity.
So, gosh, a lot going on with Mount Vernon Presbyterian. Been around for, what, 39 years?
Since 1972.
Excellent. And a lot of changes being made, but Mount Vernon Presbyterian goes from pre-K to?
Grade 12.
Grade 12. Excellent. And your role there?
I'm the head of school.
Okay. So I know that there's been a lot of buzz in the media and a lot of focus around the concept of design at Mount Vernon Presbyterian School. What does it mean?
We're taking the sort of simple definition developed by a book called Whole New Mind. And a whole new mind basically says that right-brainers will rule the world. And the definition from this is simple. It's in its simplified version, design is a combination of utility and significance. So if you take everything in this room and take the chair you're sitting on, the utility of it obviously is that it was designed to hold you up as you're sitting there. But there's also a significance piece. Is it aesthetically pleasing? Is it comfortable? For me this morning, it's not has great utility, but it's also of significance. And so when you look at 21st century sort of education, you have to look not just at the utility, but also at the significance component of it. Because when we look back just in just American history, you move from an agrarian society to an industrial society. And from an educational model, we have been working from an industrial model of education for many, many years. And now we find ourselves, it just so happens, in another shift in this digital age. And so we have students across our country, across the world, and particularly at Mount Vernon Presbyterian School, that are digital natives. So the way in which we went to school, the model of education, how is that model of education going to change? And so when you look at utility of being a college prep school, of having high SAT scores, of getting into great colleges, that utility is extremely important. But the question becomes, how relevant is that? And I don't want to try to take Cliff out of business in terms of what he's doing.
Right.
But what he's doing, the question for him would be, or surrounding him, is why is he having the opportunity to have a business like he has, mm-hmm, of advising entrepreneurs? There's a reason why he's having to do that, because right, that model of education that all of those people went through is a model that the question is it significant? Is it relevant and applicable in today's world? So, people will say, let's focus on the three R's. And obviously, that is truly the case. But really, there's a higher standard now. And making sure that education is relevant and significant, mm-hmm, because of the global marketplace that our students confront now and surely will confront when they leave school.
Can you speak a little bit about, like, the high dropout rates here in Georgia? Do you think that the reason or part of the reason for that is that we haven't adjusted fully in the public school system?
Well, I think in the public and private school system, you have a situation where it is difficult to make the shift, because basically you have Generation X, baby boom generation teachers teaching digital students.
Right.
And so that industrial model really will not prepare digital citizens. So we all were educated the same sort of way. So it's a disconnect. So if we've been, even for those schools, even the good schools, in the book Global Achievement Gap, Tony Wagner and his work, one thing he points to is even in good schools, it's no longer preparing them for an applicable sort of world. You can look at MBA programs across the country, as well as throughout the world, and major MBA programs are moving away from a case study approach to more of a design thinking sort of approach. So Cliff referenced Emory and I think the MBA program. So the question I would have is, how have they shifted to a more design thinking, more of a liberal arts? So that's part of, and you also have to look at the fact that students are not different than when we grew up, but there's a difference in terms of motivation, and there's a difference in terms of delivery system.
Mm-hmm.
So if a student is participating in athletics and he or she is missing the end of the school day, the ability to have your laptop on the bus and connect directly into that classroom so that you're not missing the breadth and depth, the richness of what's taking place, should be an opportunity for you, as just because you're not there because you're traveling
Sure.
From an athletic standpoint.
Don't you think that the pain that we're going through here economically, especially the people that are just graduating who are feeling the brunt of the unemployment, and then they're saddled with all this debt from college, I mean, hundreds of thousands of dollars, this could force a shift in the relevancy of college?
No question, because really what we should be focusing on is less about content, because the internet can trump us at any moment.
Right.
You know, the teacher in the beginning sort of was the expert at the front of the room.
Right.
Unfortunately or fortunately, the teacher is no longer the expert at the front of the room. And so what we should be concentrating on is more about a skill set, and what in the educational world is about 21st century skills of critical thinking and problem solving and a collaboration across networks and agility and adaptability and initiative and entrepreneurialism.
And curiosity to want to do that.
Yes. And so the things that Cliff is talking about in terms of advising entrepreneurs, that's exactly the type of things that are taking place at Mount Vernon in particular, so that by the time a student goes through our system from preschool through 12, we're focusing more on these 21st century skills and less on content. Now, when you say that, that is a little bit controversial, because we went through the same sort of program. And I've had people say, well, isn't 1 + 1 still equal 2?
Right.
Yes, but it's what you do with the two. It's mm-hmm. How you synthesize the two with other information. So it's right. And when you look at students, how do they think about numbers? Just because they're reading and writing, do they care about what they're reading and writing right. about? Are they engaged with what they're
right.
reading and
writing
about? Or are
they just about regurgitating back what the teacher told mm-hmm. them is important?
So the three R's, while fundamental and foundational, that's a baseline for education. In the 21st century global marketplace, right. there's a higher standard. And so I think we need to look at how we're focusing on these particular skills. It doesn't ask us to give up the great lessons that we all learned or the skills that we all developed. It's the delivery system can be just different.
Right.
For example, this Atlanta Business Radio, the delivery system
exactly.
is very different, and that's a great thing.
Right, yeah. But the content's still there.
Exactly.
That's so true, right. But people can listen to it whenever they want, wherever they want,
exactly.
while they're making dinner, exercising, right. driving, that's for sure. Can you tell us a little bit about the partnership with the CDC and what that means for Mount Vernon Presbyterian School?
We've started a system last year called the Global Learning Initiative, and it's sort of based on a book called High Noon about confronting 20 global issues in 20 years. And so we've allowed the incoming seniors each year to choose a topic within this Global Learning Initiative. So last year, the seniors chose the environment, and the students from grade 7 through 12 broke up into different groups and looked at a different issue relating to the environment, and it was very applicable. This year, the seniors chose infectious diseases.
Oh, wow.
And so we are obviously connecting with the CDC, and we're hoping to connect with Emory and the Carter Center for it. Matter of fact, just this week, we'll have Dr. Archer will be coming to us to speak to students just about this very topic. So it's something that, again, it's not the design thinking approach is not just learning information and it really a consuming model, just learning, regurgitating. It's more about a producing model. So obviously you're learning critical information from experts in the field, but it's about taking that information and really producing it. Because students these days, you know, when we all grew up, we used to say, how is this algebraic expression really going to help us?
Right.
And the adults in our lives, the teachers, would say something and we'd go, well, they're in control. So what are we going to do?
Right.
This generation of students, which is a good thing, they're not satisfied with that answer.
Mm-hmm.
They want to produce. They want to be in meaningful activity that is producing. And that's extremely important. That holds us as educators and as adults, parents, accountable. So we can no longer give them that same answer that we heard from right. our parents.
Right. I have a 12-year-old, and I find mm-hmm. that when I was a kid, having like a World Book Encyclopedia was a big deal. And then, you know, I remember waiting for each, you know, letter to come.
Gosh, remember that?
And now a kid's got the encyclopedia that changes in real time at their fingertips, mm-hmm. and they can find their answers on their own. They don't need me as much as this, like you said, the teacher used to be the expert in the room. Now the kid kind of controls that information.
personal example, I grew up in a small town in West Texas of about 1,000 people. The information I was able to access was from my teacher or a World Book Encyclopedia at home that was 10 years old and didn't have all the alphabet right. in the set. And yet, if I grew up in that same town or in Zaire or wherever across the world, there's the potential that I can have the same access. In other words, the playing field has changed.
Right.
So if the playing field has changed as educational institutions, how are we going to adjust to that change? And it is obviously happening now, but it is really going to happen. And so the opportunity to innovate and grow and sort of lead in this innovation from an educational institution standpoint, they pay me for this. I mean, they're crazy. I mean, this is what an opportunity
right.
yeah. to be a part of something. When did you, in your life, do you get to be a part of something where you're molding and shaping it from the very beginning? And we just find ourselves in this place. And so it's a great opportunity in working with staff and partnering with our parents to say, we're not giving up the greatness of our school or the greatness of education of what it's known to be, but we're going to shift the focus a little bit and really focus on these 21st century skills to really prepare them not just for college, not just for career, but for citizenship.
Right.
And that's important.
And be lifelong learners.
Absolutely.
Enjoy what they're doing.
Right.
Lee, you know what I'd like to offer to Dr. Jacobson is the opportunity to bring back some students to talk about this initiative.
Yeah.
We should do a special podcast just for them.
Absolutely.
We would
love to do that.
A special
That'd
segment.
Be great.
So we'll have to get with your calendar and you can put something together maybe in October or November.
Maybe get the CDC, maybe get some of the people involved in that
yeah.
initiative and we'll come in and we'll talk about it.
We Perfect. Would love to. A round table with the students and yourself. You're obviously very passionate about this. And
you're right down the road. So
that's,
everybody
that's
wins.
Right.
Perfect.
I love it. Right here in Sandy Springs. You could probably walk here on a nice day.
Close. I mean, I'm in a suit today, so that might not be a good thing in this humidity, but thank you so much for the opportunity to be here.
Thank you. Gosh, great information. It is so truly, we talk about learning and it's exciting. I mean, it's so much fun to be able to have all of this information at your fingertips at any time. And, you know, with the 13 and a 14-year-old myself, we know, and you with the 12-year-old, they learn so totally different from when we did.
They accessed information.
I felt really old when you talked about the World Book because
you had one too.
Oh yeah, it was a big deal.
It was
huge deal, and they were so thick. And wow, I wanted to read them cover to
right.
cover. Wow, things have changed. Things have definitely changed. And if you're in Cartersville, things are changing fast because we've got some new art exhibits. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show this morning. We have Seth Hopkins, who's the executive director of the Booth Western Art Museum. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So we've got a very exciting exhibit. Tell us about it.
Well, right off the bat, we have a Ansel Adams exhibition, which is the largest exhibition we've ever hosted and the largest Ansel Adams show that's ever come to the Southeast. It opens September 25th at the Booth Western Art Museum and runs through February of next year. So has a good long run with us. And it's interesting to add on to what we were hearing about in the traditional school setting. We are an institution that is based on education as well. That is what a museum exists to do, although it is a much more non-traditional approach and takes everybody from kids on school field trips all the way through senior adults who may be participating in non-traditional learning and lifelong learning, as Lee was alluding to earlier. We are one of three museums in Cartersville under the Georgia Museum's umbrella. It includes the Telescience Museum and the Bartow History Center. Between the three museums, we have a 250,000 square feet of museum space, and I can't say it, but some other folks call us the Smithsonian of North Georgia.
It's funny that he says that. Lee, have you been to the
No, I've been. It's on my calendar to go up there this year.
But you went to the Telus Museum.
No.
No?
I never went.
Oh, my goodness.
I want to go. I know. I'm sorry.
And again, I have to say to our listeners, people that think that you have to have an overnight bag to go to Cartersville, you don't.
What is it? 40?
It was 40 minutes.
Yes.
Today in traffic.
The same amount of time to get from our Sandy Springs studio to the Georgia Aquarium, honestly, and get parked is the time it would take you to get to there.
And we have free parking.
There you go. That's worth it right there. Save $8.
So tell us about the new exhibit.
Well, as I mentioned, this is the largest exhibition of Ansel Adams photography that's ever traveled in the Southeast. Over 130 images, and has all the great hits, the Yosemite pieces, the Teton National Park, the San Francisco Bay images. But really is Ansel Adams like you've never seen him before. If you have a coffee table book or you have the poster or the calendar or any of those things, you've seen kind of the greatest hits. This goes a lot deeper and really delves into his full range of his career. Includes portraiture and cityscapes and still lives and everything he ever shot, including portraits of like George O'Keefe, who was a good friend of his. There's also images from even here in the Southeast. He took a trip to the Great Smoky Mountains in Tennessee and shot some incredible photographs in that area as well. So it's really an opportunity to delve into the genius of Ansel Adams and to do it more than just looking at the photographs. In the exhibition, we actually have a video of Ansel Adams talking about his work. He passed away 25 years ago, and you know, many people were kind of not aware of him while he was still alive. And so the opportunity to hear him talk about the work is very powerful. We've also created a recreation of his darkroom in the exhibition.
Very cool.
Because the genius of Ansel Adams is only partially what he captured through the viewfinder. The real magic happened when he got in the darkroom, and he invented the modern darkroom techniques that are at the essence of what we do with Photoshop today in terms of altering imagery, and he had to do it all mechanically. We also have a baby grand piano in the exhibition because his first career was as a concert pianist. And he often credited his knowledge of music and specifically the piano as being very powerful in how he manipulated photography images and the way he thought about processing photographic images. And so we really try to make that connection and get people to see where that connection exists. And so I think it's a very powerful exhibition. And in addition to the other 45,000 square feet of permanent exhibitions we have that deal with the West and the Civil War and our presidency here in the United States, I think it makes for a great day trip.
Now, is the museum kid-friendly? Is there hands-on stuff to play around with, or is it where they just look?
All three of our museums have specific kids' areas and have hands-on activities at the booth. Specifically, we have a Sagebrush Ranch, which is 2,500 square feet, with about 40 hands-on stations that are similar to like a science center-type exhibits, but are art-themed and teach you about art and art principles and about Western history and the geography and peoples of the western parts of the United States. And my daughter is the same age as yours, Lee, and when we first opened the museum, she said, I want to go there every Sunday. She went every Sunday for about 4 months and spent an hour in that kids' area and found enough to do to keep her occupied.
Wow.
I believe that. You got to
take
Max.
Yeah, you went. You had a great time.
Loved it. I mean, the kids' area, you had a hard time.
Do they have shooting? You like shooting. Is there
no,
a shooting
but there's
range?
There's some guns. Mm-hmm. A lot of Western, tons of Western art. Lee, I had no idea there could be so much Western art, and it's in Cartersville.
Well, it is the largest permanent exhibition of Western art in the country, and it's in Cartersville, Georgia. And, Lee, if you like shooting, we have an event coming up in October, our annual Cowboy Festival and Symposium. And over that weekend, October 23rd, 24th, we will have 5 reenactments of the gunfight at OK Corral.
Wow. Now, Amy's the shooter, so maybe you can get okay. her. Were there any cowgirls in that shootout?
There were some soiled doves, but there weren't too many cowgirls. And
wow, Amy, imagine that. You in the middle of that? That's a dream.
That is a dream. That does sound like lots of fun. Some great photo ops there, I'm sure. And you do a lot with education. I know you mentioned that. Ansel Adams, when does it begin?
It opens on September 25th. That's okay. Our public opening. And it runs through February 20th, so you've got a good long time to come out. At the opening, if you're a member, and if you're not a member, you can log on to our website, boothmuseum.org. We'd love to have you become a member. You'd be invited to come to the opening on the night of the 25th. And we have Susan Todd Racky, who's a photography curator and art historian here in the Atlanta area, will be in Cartersville speaking at 5 and 7 p.m. on the legacy of Ansel Adams and talking about his genius, and will be a very powerful educational opportunity.
So all photographers, that's a must-attend event, don't you think?
Absolutely, and has been listed as one of the premier events by Atlanta Celebrates Photography, which is our big photography organization here in Atlanta. They're actually bringing a bus up that night, and we're doing the 5 o'clock lecture is kind of a special thing for them, but anybody who's a member of the museum is invited to come as well. And we'll be doing lectures throughout the exhibition. Kind of every month there'll be a lecture that deals with the Ansel Adams Show and an opportunity to really have a profound educational experience.
Terrific. I'm definitely there. I'm going to check it out. And what a great approach, too. I love the recreation of the dark room. That excites me because when you read about him and his upbringing and just all the incredible things he accomplished, to really be able to go into his life like that would be spectacular.
Well, with the education theme, it's really interesting to look at Ansel Adams as a case study, so to speak, in that he was a very poor student. He was ADD before we knew what ADD was. His dad, though, was very perceptive and realized at an early age that traditional education was not going to work for him. And so he basically took him out of school. He became somewhat homeschooled. And lucky for him, the Pan-Pacific Exhibition was taking place in San Francisco the year he was like 13, 14, 15 years old, which was basically a World's Fair type exhibition. His father bought him a year pass, and he basically went there every day and explored a different part of the exhibition. The pavilions from all the countries around the world that had brought their technology there and set it up, the artwork that had been brought from around the world, and he basically educated himself through that exhibition, and what a learning opportunity for somebody with a curious mind. And he credited that experience with the bulk of his formal education that he had in his lifetime.
Terrific.
Yeah.
I got to go and learn more.
I know.
Give us the website again and let folks know how they can. Do they have to purchase tickets or they can get them at the door?
They can just buy tickets at the door for the regular exhibition. If they'd like to come to the opening event on the 25th, they would need to sign up to become a member, or they can purchase a membership
right,
at the door.
Right, that's a private event.
It's for members.
Right, for members
but,
only.
But starting on the day of the 25th, during our normal operating hours, the exhibition is included with our normal admission, which is only $10 for adults. I mean, what a deal.
Is there a pass for all the museums?
There is a museum package that we offer. It's $200 a year. You get unlimited access to all three museums. You get to come to all their openings, all their events.
That's per person?
That's for a whole family.
Family. Wow.
And includes all kids, no matter how many kids are in the family. And you can come to all three museums as often as you want and come to our opening events, and you get our newsletters.
Wow.
And all
that's
that kind of thing.
That's a great deal.
It's the greatest deal in Atlanta.
And you also got to visit the Telus Museum. I could have spent the whole day there. It's amazing, especially if you like science. I'm going back there just to view the periodic table again. I love that wall.
Well, it's one of those things. One of the founders of the Telus Science Museum said he almost failed Georgia Tech and flunked out of Georgia Tech because he couldn't understand what the periodic table was and how to use it and why it was important. And speaking again to relevancy and significance and, you know, why do I need to know this kind
right.
of thing. So one of the exhibits we created there is a periodic table that has a little box. And in the box is either a hunk of that element or what it's used for or why it's important or for ones that have no relevance or only exist for microseconds or whatever it might be. There's kind of a description about that. And
so it really comes to life.
Yes.
Absolutely, and that's what we try to do at all of our museums is really bring those subjects, whether it's history or art or science, to life and make them relevant for people. And in some ways, to be an oasis from all of this digital technology, that there still is power in objects, whether it's an art object,
right.
a historical object, or a scientific artifact, that the power of the object can still captivate people, even with access to all this digital technology.
Right.
So true. Seth, thanks for being with us today and telling us a little bit more about the Booth Western Museum. Just a short trip away in Cartersville, Georgia. And there's great restaurants there, too, Lee.
You're going to give me a list?
Under the train tracks?
Yeah, Appalachian Grill, which is a stone's throw from the Booth Museum. There's several other great little local spots, a lot of really classic mom-and-pop diners and Italian restaurants and those kinds of things. And then we do have a cafe at the Booth Museum and at the Telus Museum. If you want to just get a quick snack, we'd be happy to help you with that so you don't have to interrupt your visit to the museum. But there are a lot of little great restaurants throughout Cartersville.
Yes, they are. I attest to that. Thank you for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Our next guest this morning, you know, we get requests and sometimes people nominate other folks and say, hey, this person's awesome. You got to talk to him. And the request for him to be on the show was so inviting that I kept thinking, I got to meet him. He sounds like someone that educates his clients, and I got an education just reading about him. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show this morning. We have Peter Goldberger. Welcome.
Good morning, Amy and Lee.
From Performance Plus Marketing. Now, it says you've been...
It's not just Performance.
Performance Plus.
It's Performance Plus.
Yeah. Well,
so
at least
that's how much better it is than just regular performance.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but he's been in sales for 17 years, but yet he looked about as young as Dr. Jacobson.
I know.
You and I are talking about the World Book.
And he had no idea.
Yeah.
I have to tell you, I'm glad this is a radio show. Some of our listeners may disagree.
So, Peter, welcome. Tell us a little bit about your business and how you got in the industry.
Thank you. Performance Plus Marketing, we help our clients increase sales through award-winning reward and recognition programs. And when I tell my friends and colleagues, or not colleagues, but friends about this industry, they say, is this really an industry? I've never heard of such a thing. It's actually a $35 billion industry. We focus on clients who typically go through distribution. They sell their products through distribution. Floor covering, bedding are wonderful examples where you have manufacturers selling through independent dealers. And those dealers have retail sales associates, so they could sell one of several different products. What we do is we look at those retail sales associates and we educate them. We get them talking about your product, our manufacturer's products, and then we reward them for selling manufacturer products. And it's interesting because what we know about retail sales associates is they're creatures of habit, just like we all are on this radio show. They park in the same spots, they eat at the same places, and they're salespeople, so they sell the same stuff. So if our job is to change behavior and get them focused on a specific manufacturer's product, what are we going to do? How do we achieve this behavior? And that's when we set up this platform where we get retail sales associates learning about this specific product. We then reward them for selling this product. And then, more importantly, we get these retail sales associates talking about our manufacturer's product. Because as you know, when corporates try to train people on their product, it's, oh, that's corporate speak, that's corporate speak. As a salesperson, when I hear a colleague talking about my product, I listen. And I may say to myself, hey, this is how that's cool, I see how you do it, but you know what? I do it a little bit differently. And then I may respond to how that person's talking about this product. And I say, you know what? When I get a consumer walking through that door, this is how I sell that product.
All right. So you educate and motivate, but you got to explain a little bit more. I need you to
you
got to
walk us through a real example. No hypothetical. Like tell us through like a real example of how this plays out and what the reward was.
Absolutely. So our programs are typically web-based, and our manufacturer will say, "Hey, this is what we want our retail sales associates focused on." And mind you, they don't control them. They can't sell our product. They could sell a competitor's. So we put together this platform where retail sales associates log in, typically with their manufacturer account number. And when they log in, they will see earn X for selling Y.
Okay.
So can you take us through a real thing? Are you allowed to mention brands? What's a store? What's a retailer?
Absolutely. So in the floor covering industry, we do a tremendous amount with a company called Quickstep, which is a laminate manufacturer.
Okay.
And if you have ever shopped for floor covering, it's probably one of the most frustrating things you've ever done. Imagine picking out a brown piece of carpet. Imagine picking out a laminate piece.
So would this affect like Home Depot or like one of those big boxes?
Typically, we do not go through the big boxes. This is more the retail sales, the mom and pop dealers.
Okay, so like I go into a boutique flooring place.
Lee's Floor and More.
Right.
Okay. So you walk into Lee's Floor and More. Let's actually not walk in. Let's be a retail sales associate there. They'll get a communication in the mail talking about the Quick Step Rewards program. It'll ask them to visit a website. They will log into that website, and when they log in, they're going to get specific information. They get a username and password. And then it's similar to your Delta program, your Marriott program, your Hilton program, where by selling and recommending specific product to a consumer, they're going to earn points. And with those points, they can redeem them for merchandise and travel and XYZ, you name it.
So it's like a reward program for the retail salesperson.
That is exactly right. Yes, that is exactly what it is. But we kind of take it to the next level. There are several companies that do exactly what we do. But our focus is on truly engaging that retail sales associate. We need to have more activities on that platform than just rewarding them for selling specific product. And that's when we tie in training, we tie in education, we tie in peer-to-peer marketing, which is explaining how they're selling their product. So as a fellow retail sales associate, I can say, that's how you do it. Because at the end of the day...
So you share best practices?
Absolutely, absolutely. Oh. And we do it in a way where Amy's Floor and More, who is located across the street from Lee's Floor and More, may not see it. So we do segment it.
Uh-huh. So it's we could both be rewarded even though we're in competitors.
Absolutely.
And then so my interaction with your company might be slightly different than Amy's.
That is correct. That is correct. But what we give the manufacturer is we then go on and give the manufacturer data about who is selling the product. They may know what store sells a lot. For example, at Amy's Floor & More, you may have 3 retail sales associates, but only one may sell your product. We then give our manufacturers the ability to look into that store and say, ah, this is my MVP, and then these 2 retail sales associates, I need to do a better job of reaching out to that person, making sure they understand the features and benefits of our product.
Interesting. Educate, then motivate, and reward. I like that. Now, how has social media changed what you're doing?
Any way we can communicate more with the retail sales associate, the better. And I know you were talking about encyclopedias earlier. Well, at one time, the way that we communicated was through print, and then came along fax, and we could print and fax, and then came along email. But there have to be more ways. So we actually use Twitter a lot, and we will use Twitter to communicate to our audience what's happening in the program, getting as many followers as we can.
And we're both drinking
at the
coffee.
Same time, and that was bad timing.
That's interesting because I know we've had a lot of listeners lately that are very engaged in Twitter. What are some of the other trends you see that might be affecting your industry?
Like, is Facebook? Do you guys use Facebook as well?
We do not use as much Facebook. The concern for us using Facebook is we cannot control the messaging that people might be saying about our client, the manufacturer.
Right.
So we want to have first glance at any time anyone is speaking about our manufacturer's product.
Right.
So for our industry, I don't see Facebook being a big piece of it. What I do see is data. And I see the more data we can give our clients, the manufacturer, about the retail sales associate, the better. For example, how long are they on our platform for? And that's important because if they're on there for 5 to 7 minutes, what are we showing them in 5 to 7 minutes? What do we want to be talking about in 5 to 7 minutes? We can also segment by state, by region. We can segment by A customer, B customer. So giving that information back to our manufacturer is going to be critical in the future. It truly is.
No doubt. Now, who it would be a typical client? I mean, it sounds like it's all over the board.
Right?
But
every industry?
Yes. Today I'm speaking specifically about manufacturer programs who go through independent distribution. We do employee programs as well, but it's truly large companies. We typically focus on $500 million and larger companies is who we focus on.
Okay, and how do you go about getting them? I mean, are you the sales guy?
You know what? I am one of the salespeople. Thank you. I am. we use, actually, it's funny you mention it, perfect timing for today. We use LinkedIn a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's unbelievable how networking truly does help. Luckily for us, we are an award-winning incentive company, and we have done a very good job in getting our story and message out. And at times, we actually have people calling us, which is wonderful.
Wow, yeah, that is great.
But we're always looking for new business. So typically we will visit trade shows and whatever we can to better understand that industry.
Who makes the buying decision for your service?
Typically the vice president of sales might, a vice president of marketing might, brand directors might. It's really anybody who needs that retail sales associates, whoever is trying to get their story to the retail sales associate, that's who we can help. Because as we all know who's in sales, you have to have a story to tell in order to sell a product.
Right.
So whoever is struggling getting that story or that message out to that retail sales associate, that's the person we can help.
Terrific. That he's speaking to the pain. We always ask our listeners, what kind of pain would our listeners be feeling to know that they would want to contact you? That did a good job painting that picture.
Yeah. And then what's the best way for someone to get a hold of you guys?
Thank you. You can visit our website, www.performplus.com. You can always dial us at the local number, 770-993-9954. If you are going to the Motivation Show in October, I will actually be speaking to engaging participants October 12th at 3 o'clock at the McCormick Center in Chicago.
Ooh, I love that place.
It is nice. It really is.
Home sweet home for me. Okay. Now, if you want to know where to eat there, you have to call me because I can give you the list.
Expect a phone call.
And the weather will still be nice. You know what, Lee? We might need to go
to
that
show.
We should
do a road trip. We should go. Yeah. Maybe we can broadcast live from that show.
Perfect.
We can work on that.
Radio X live. From McCormick Place, yes, in Chicago. I like that idea a lot. And I definitely have learned a lot. And the fact that, Peter, you come so highly recommended, now I know why.
Oh, well, thank you.
Now I know why. Thank you. Thanks so much for being a guest today. And one last time, how folks can reach you.
Thank you for having us. www.performplus.com or 770-993-9954.
Terrific. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Another event, and then we have one final guest. And Lee, we are saving the best for last. But next, we want to talk about an event coming up. Not in Chicago. We only get to go a little bit further north. But welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. We have Reed Casey. Welcome.
Hello, good morning. Thank you for having me.
So you're with Johns Creek Chamber of Commerce for Young Professionals.
Yes, the Young Professionals, and I was really excited to talk about the Young Professionals this morning, but now I'm just interested in the World Book that you guys are talking about.
Yeah, because we'd be part of the old professional group that you have there.
Your grandma sat them on you at the dinner table to make you taller.
We need to get a hold of one of those and pass it around one of our meetings.
So what are the Young Professionals of Johns Creek?
The Young Professionals is a subset of the Johns Creek Chamber of Commerce. And we are comprised of individuals under the age of 40, of salespeople, business owners, we're a subset of the Johns Creek Chamber of Commerce. And mm-hmm. one of the things that Johns Creek Chamber of Commerce offers the young professionals is mentorships for young professionals in the Johns Creek community. We also offer mentorships to high school kids, college kids, people that are just graduating college, and hopefully help them establish in this tough economy ways that they can find jobs. And
That's a great program. You know, Lee and I, you'll never see us there because we're not under 40, but right. we would be those salt and pepper haired mentors for the young folks like yourself. So it's interesting. Y'all get together, and what's involved in a breakfast and learn?
Yeah, like what's that? Can you take us through this?
Sure. Well, the Young Professionals was developed about 8 months ago, and I'm part of the education committee on the Young Professionals, and one of my responsibilities is to host a breakfast and learn. And if you've heard of a lunch and learn or yes. an event where...
They had that back in our time.
Yeah, back in your time. If you've heard of an event where of lunch and learn where you have a guest speaker who's speaking on a subject that is appealing to business owners young right. and salespeople, it's exactly what a breakfast and learn is. Breakfast and learn is our event hosted quarterly where we have a professional sales trainer come speak to the young professionals of the Johns Creek area and or businesses around the Johns Creek area. You don't have to just do business in Johns Creek to attend our events right. and help us educate us on tips, trade secrets that they use in their business to help.
Now, the next one you said mm-hmm. is on prospecting. What were some of the past ones?
We have recently hosted one when the homebuyer tax credit was popular. We right. hosted a first-time homebuyer seminar to educate young families and people interested in buying their first home on homeownership, the benefits of homeownership, right. and how you do that.
Valuable information. Can anyone attend? You said you have to be under 40, right?
This event, anybody can attend. A lot okay. of our events are just for 40 and under, mm-hmm. but this event is open to the public. We have 100 seats available, so RSVP is we encourage you to go online and register. I'll tell you how to do that in just a minute. Mm-hmm. And this event, particularly, we wanted to open up to everybody because of who the speaker is. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you just a little bit about her. Lissa Verstige is with Sandler Training Institute. Sandler is one of the top national ranked sales training institutes in the world, and right. Lissa is the president of the Georgia Sales and Development Training.
I think she's been a guest, Lee.
Oh, really?
I've met her.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, I've met her. Very sharp, very sharp.
She's going to be talking about prospecting and how you can utilize prospecting in your business to help grow your business. And we thought that everybody, whatever age you were, you know, prospecting and networking is huge in your business. So
that's right.
We open it up to everybody, not just 40s and under.
And how can we register?
Go online to the Johns Creek Chamber's website, johnscreekchamber.com. Under the events tab, you can register. Click on the calendar under September 28th. That's when the event's going to be held. Click on the calendar and register, and it'll shoot an email to the chamber.
Terrific. Thank you.
You're
Thanks
welcome.
For being our
Thank
guest
you.
This morning and for telling us about the event. Gosh, we've got so much coming up.
I know. That's Busy
why,
calendar.
Yeah, that's why our show is so full this morning, because we have got so many events coming up. Last but certainly not least, I'm excited about this subject. We've got art. We've got education. We've got all kinds of things to be excited about today. From Premier Art LLC, welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. We have Anaji Henderson.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us about your company. I went online and was exploring this a little bit. How cool is the fact that it was founded 14 years ago by your father?
Yes, yes.
Very cool. So he's the artist.
Yes, he's one of the artists now. We're an art management consulting firm that specializes in original works of art by African-American artists. Mm-hmm. My brother and I, we finished school. We're all engineers. I'm a mechanical engineer. My brother's a chemical engineer, and my father's an electrical engineer.
So that's why you logically went into the art
exactly,
business.
Exactly, exactly, exactly. Worked in the corporate world for a while and decided, after looking at my father retired once we got scholarships to school. And once he did that, once he retired, my brother and I went to college. Once we graduated, we looked at the business and said, we need to take over the business side of the company. Mm-hmm. Since then, my brother and I partner, Omari Henderson, we partnered, and we now manage my father and four other artists around the country selling original works of art.
Awesome. So you got him out there working. Go, come on.
Oh,
create more
keep
art.
Painting, keep painting.
And it took him a while to get used to it, but it's a pretty good relationship.
Like
now.
Every day, I need another piece of work here,
exactly,
guy.
Exactly.
Let's get on the move.
Exactly, exactly.
It's interesting. We've talked a lot about the digital technology and the world in which we live, and Dr. Jacobson talking about, just the design of learning has changed so much, but yet it seems like people's appreciation for art has increased.
Right, right.
And it's not moving. It's still, there still allows room for interpretation. Tell us about the art tastings.
Well, a point you brought up. One thing about art is a lot of times people are very interested in original works of art, especially, but there's an intimidation factor that's there. So we created something called an art tasting. I was with a large consulting firm prior to leaving corporate, and had a client who became a client who was asking me a little bit more about the art business, and she was saying, well, we need to figure out a way we can have you all over, but I don't know much about art. Is there some way we can put something together? So she invited some of her friends over, and we had this event. We called it an art tasting. And what we do during these events is that we want to cut down all those intimidation factors that keep so many people out of galleries and museums. And so we come in. My father basically leads the discussion where we begin to talk about paints and brushes and things like that, that so many people, you want to ask the question sometimes when you're at a museum, like, well, why does this cost $3,000?
Well, that's something I always didn't understand. Like, you could have a big painting and it could be like $50,000. And then another little painting could be like $100,000.
Exactly.
And like something could be just one solid color, and that could be like $500,000. Like, who prices these things?
You need an art tasting.
I think so. I mean, like it's obviously it isn't the price isn't based on the time they put into it. Like most of our in business, most of people get paid for time.
Right.
But in art, it's not the case.
Well, in some cases it is. Some cases where, for example, my father's been painting for about 50 years. He did his first oil when he was 12, and he's been a professional artist for years and years and years now. But so in pricing pieces, you look at certain things like material costs. Sometimes, a brush can cost you up to $400 for a brush if you're doing an oil painting, for example. Canvases on linen can cost you sometimes over $100+. And so when you start looking at the investment you already made inside the raw materials before even putting paint on it, you're already at a few hundred dollars there. And then also you look at the experience that you have behind an artist who's been painting for years, for example. And so you do a little bit of a calculation. Now, and I will say some of the prices still confuse me as well sometimes when I see some of the work. But art is seen in many circles as currency as well. So you have some wealthier clients who may collect, for example, my father's work and never show it. And what they're waiting on is, sadly to say, a lot of times, art appreciates even more so in value once the artist is deceased because they know the artist will never create another piece.
Right, so there's a finite amount of pieces at that point.
Exactly, exactly.
And then it's a supply and demand kind of thing.
Exactly. And so that plays a piece into it as well. But we have clients out there who may never show a piece, who will take a piece and just actually sit it away, they'll catalog and that's it. And then there's other ways you can make money off of pieces as far as showing museums and things like that, because they'll purchase them from you or lease them to say the least about the process, but they will lease the pieces from you, take them on exhibition, return them back to you, and you've made a profit off of that as well. So from a collector standpoint, there's ways of that they use the work as currency in a sense.
Interesting. We've had all kinds of people talk about investing lately,
right,
but not so much investing in art. It's a great idea.
How do you choose the right artist to invest in? Just like, is it just like you would if you were investing in a stock?
we always tell people the good thing about art is that it has two different types of values. You know, there's a financial and there's intrinsic value. So we always encourage people to buy what you like. It's kind of like the stock market where you don't know what's going to really happen. Now, right. You can, you know, hopefully through the way we're marketing ourselves and the caliber of arts that we have, the work that we're working with now will have a value in the future and will be a good investment. But that also depends on the market. What makes a Louis Vuitton purse better than a Coach purse or vice versa? And it all really depends on the marketplace. And the funniest thing about art is because it outlives all of us. It may not see any success in this lifetime, but your grandchildren may go to college off of the right. off of one piece.
Wow.
And so that's the other piece of it. So you want to definitely buy something that you like first. That's the number right. one rule.
What about is it a better choice to pick an original piece of art, or sometimes like you see those ones where like it's a print, like so many out of so many?
Right. Well, from a standpoint of collecting, you always want to get, if you can afford an original, that's definitely where you want to go. For one, the idea of there's only one like it in the world right. adds a piece of exclusiveness to it, and as well as value. And there are different types of prints as well. There are open edition prints, which mean there's no number at the bottom. You see there's just a – it's pretty much equates to a poster on nicer paper.
Right.
And then you have a signed and numbered print, which would be then typically done in pencil, signed and numbered in pencil, and it'll be at the very bottom of you'll see a number over another number. And that basically adds a little bit more value to it, but the original is still the way
right.
to go.
So, but that's just a lower price point for somebody to get in, at least get
exactly.
their feet wet in this?
Our biggest goal is, we say, one, buy what you like, and you start where you can. So if you're a college student, for example, you love art, you know, buy a print. And as you begin to grow in wealth and you know, get that first job out of school. I know I bought my first painting when I was 23. People were laughing at me. I had just bought my house. I didn't have a couch, but I had a painting on the wall. And so it all depends on your taste. But as you can begin to afford it, you know, it really will. It really does something for you from a standpoint of just, you know, I enjoy looking at my piece, but at the same time, I know over time that piece that I bought back then at the Atlanta History Center, I now manage that artist, and I know I sell paintings of that same size now for thousands more than what I bought it for.
Right. That's
so I already know I have value in it. So
that's awesome. So if we're interested in learning more about the art or want an art tasting, how can we reach you?
You can visit us at www.premierart.net. And there you can have – there's a sign up for art tastings. We also have newsletters that go out on a weekly basis that show new pieces that we have out by our artists. And we also show work at Straits. We partner with Ludacris and Straits Restaurant. And every Wednesday, we show fine art there. The way we figured is that, you know, some people don't go to museums and galleries anymore, but they do go eat. And so we found a fine dining restaurant that we can now show work at every week. And he allows us to come in and actually hang on the walls. And he's there sometimes, and we go through the art with him as well.
Does he do cool. art? Does he paint?
No, he doesn't. He's actually getting into collecting now, though.
There Very you go. Cool.
Wonderful. Something for everyone, I tell you.
This show has it all.
Woo! And we are so out of time, Lee. I just looked up and went,
We're
wow.
in the bonus.
Yeah, we are in the bonus round. Hey, by the way, the Atlanta Dream, we have got to support the Atlanta Dream.
Yes, they're down
2-0.
You know, we interviewed, you weren't here. We interviewed Kathy Betty a couple weeks ago in here.
She's so awesome. And the camera obviously loves her because they're always focusing on her and her enthusiasm. Yeah. But yeah, hopefully when they bring it back home now, they can win it.
Yeah.
But we're in the bonus round and we are out of time. But thanks so much for being our guest this morning. Give us the website one more time.
It's www.premierart.net.
Perfect. Thanks for being with us today. Until next week, I hope you have a fabulous week. I'm Amy Otto with the Atlanta Business Radio Show.